This is Poetry Off the Shelf from the Poetry Foundation, June 1st, 2009. I'm Curtis Fox. This week, mediate this, buddy. Kenneth Fearing has long been known as a poet of the Depression. The Depression of the 1930s, not the one we may well be in right now. Fearing was called a poet for workers, and generally, well, I guess he's been kind of ignored as a poetic relic from a bygone era. All this is unfair to the man's stylishly noirish and highly entertaining poetry, as we'll hear in a minute. On our website, you can read an article about Fearing and the Federal Writers Project, a program that helped writers survive the dismal 1930s economy. The Library of America is also publishing a book of his selected poems. Robert Polito wrote the introduction to the book. It's an essay you can also read on our website, poetryfoundation.org. Robert Polito is a poet, critic, biographer, and anthologist, and he directs the graduate writing program at the New School in New York City. He joins me from Chicago, from WBEZ. Hi, Robert.
Hi.
So in your essay, in your introductory essay, you point out that Fearing's poems are obsessed with media, with movies, newspapers, radio advertising, the media from his era. And this makes his poems seem a lot more contemporary than his reputation as a Depression poet would imply, doesn't it?
Well, I think what makes Fearing, an astonishingly sophisticated poet is that in my experience, he was the first poet to really sort of grapple with the notion that if you put really anything into a poem, whether you put a tree in there or you put a river into the tree, what you're also putting in there is all of the other poems that mention trees and rivers, as well as all of the movies and popular songs and, and newspaper articles that have focused on similar materials. And I think that I look upon his first book, Angel Arms, as one of the great modernist debuts of the 1920s, and books that I would put next to it would be Harmonium, by Wallace Stevens, and Observations by Marianne Moore. I think what he did is that he constructed these vernacular collages, and unlike most poets who are associated with the late 20s and 1930s who wrote about quote-unquote ordinary life, he approached ordinary life only through mediated versions of it, mainly through popular culture.
Mm-hmm. Now, as far as I know, there are no recordings of Kenneth Fearing reading his own poetry.
I've never heard one.
Yeah, and I've looked long and hard and I haven't been able to find any. And you were nice enough to volunteer to read a few of his poems, but I have to say I don't envy you because the way I read them is that they should be kind of read by a tough guy, maybe with like a cigarette dangling from his lips and an empty bottle somewhere on the scene. But could you tell us a little bit about the poem you're about to read? It's called Aphrodite Metropolis, number 3.
It's a love story, but I think it's a love story that in a kind of sly way is actually rewriting Andrew Marvel's To His Coy Mistress and Andrew Marvel's The Garden.
Uh-huh.
It turns that whole notion of carpe diem into something a lot more vernacular and commercial.
Go ahead and give it a read.
Harry loves Myrtle. He has strong arms from the warehouse, and on Sunday when they trolley to Emerald Meadows, he doesn't say, "What will your chastity amount to when your flesh withers in a little while?" No, on Sunday when they trolley to Emerald Meadows, they look at the Sunday paper. Girl slays banker betrayer. They spread it around on the grass. Bathtub stirs Jersey row. And then they sit down on it. Nice. Harry doesn't say, "Ziggins ointment for withered flesh cures thousands of men and women of moles, warts, red veins, flabby throats, scalp, and hair diseases. Not expensive and fully guaranteed." No. Harry says nothing at all. He smiles, and they kiss in the Emerald Meadows on the Sunday paper.
That was Aphrodite Metropolis by Kenneth Fearing. That was the third poem in a series. So what we have here is two lovers going to a park and sitting down on the newspaper, right?
Yeah. And I think it's fascinating that they're reading tabloid headlines about murder and fights and advertisements. The language kind of, I think, slowly insinuates itself into the sort of seize the day language of, you know, Andrew Marvel's To His Coy Mistress. You know, what will your chastity amount to when your flesh withers in a little while?
But specifically, Harry doesn't say that stuff.
Well, except Fearing does.
So Fearing is saying, basically, they may not say this, but this is informing their experience.
Yeah, and it's against the backdrop of what's in the newspaper that they're, in fact, sitting on.
Yeah.
And I think part of the wit of the poem is, of course, if they're sitting on the newspaper, they're kind of ignoring it at the same time.
And, right.
And they are seizing the day. They kiss in the emerald meadows on the Sunday paper.
What do you make of the language here? Because Fearing is pretty great at vernacular, tough guy talk, but here he's calling the lawn in the park the emerald meadows.
Well, you know what that reminds me of? I mean, it reminds me of the kind of brochures that you might see, promoting a trip to Ireland. You know, come and see the emerald meadows. I mean, I think that he knows that there's something overreaching in an upwardly mobile way about that phrase.
Let's try another short poem by Fearing. It's called X Minus X. Can you say just a little bit about this before reading it?
I mean, I think here you have Fearing totally immersing us inside this mediated world. I mean, and I think one of the interesting things about Fearing's poems is that his sense of what a personality is, I think, is a kind of mediated composite. Somebody who's really made up of kind of spare parts from what they watch and what they listen to and what they read.
Uh-huh. So can you read X Minus X?
Even when your friend, the radio, is still. Even when her dream, the magazine, is finished. Even when his life, the ticker, is silent. Even when their destiny, the boulevard, is bare. And after that paradise, the dance hall, is closed. After that theater, the clinic, is dark. Still there will be your desire and her desire and his desire and their desire. Your laughter, their laughter. Your curse and his curse. Her reward and their reward. Their dismay and his dismay and her dismay and yours. Even when your enemy, the collector, is dead, even when your counselor, the salesman, is sleeping, even when your sweetheart, the movie queen, has spoken, even when your friend, the magnet, is gone.
That was X Minus X. Listeners won't know this, but the poem was divided up into three stanzas. In the middle stanza, which begins, still there will be your desire and hers and his hopes and theirs. It's almost as if he's trying to reach beyond what's in media and saying, well, there's still basic fundamental human truths of desires and hope and laughter. But then he goes in his third stanza, which
exactly
brings it back to a mediated environment.
What the poem reveals is that what you think is your desire and what she thinks is her desire and what he thinks is his desire and what they think is their desire is in fact made up of what they're listening to and reading from the radio, the magazines, and the ticker tapes.
Yeah.
It's pretty smart, isn't it?
Yeah, it is smart. And thank God he did that in that poem, because otherwise, if he had ended it after the second stanza, it wouldn't have had its punch.
Yeah, because, I mean, I think there are no easy ironies here. Fearing isn't somebody who's a kind of conventional satirist advancing ordinary life against the illusions of the movies and the magazines. I mean, I think he's suggesting, I think, in a very powerful way that, in fact, there is no life apart from that for us.
Let's try a third poem. This one is called Dirge, and it's a bit longer than the first two that we've heard, but tell me a little bit about it before you read it.
Well, I mean, I think Dirge is the, as the title suggests, is an elegy.
Yeah, dirge is a chant for the dead.
Exactly.
So this poem is about a man who, before he died, went broke. He went from having a lot of money to having basically nothing. Here's Dirge by Kenneth Fearing.
1, 2, 3 was the number he played, but today the number came 3, 2, 1. Bought his carbide at 30 and it went to 29. Had the favorite at Bowie, but the track was slow. Oh, executive type, would you like to drive a floating power knee-action silk-upholstered 6? Wed a Hollywood star, shoot the course in 58, draw to the ace, king, jack. Oh, fellow with a will who won't take no, watch out for 3 cigarettes on the same single match. Oh, Democratic voter born in August under Mars, beware of liquidated rails. denouement to denouement. He took a personal pride in the certain way he lived his own private life. But nevertheless, they shut off his gas. Nevertheless, the bank foreclosed. Nevertheless, the landlord called. Nevertheless, the radio broke. And 12 o'clock arrived just once too often. Just the same, he wore one gray tweed suit, bought one straw hat, drank one straight scotch, walked one short step, took one long look, drew one deep breath, just one too many. And while he died as while he lived, going whop to the office and bluey home to sleep, and Biff got married and Bam had children and Oof got fired, Zowie did he live and Zowie did he die, with who the hell are you at the corner of the casket, and where the hell we going on the right-hand silver knob, and who the hell cares walking second from the end with an American Beauty wreath from why the hell not. Very much missed by the circulation staff of the New York Evening Post, deeply, deeply mourned by the BMT. Wham, Mr. Roosevelt, pow, Sears Roebuck, ock, Big Dipper, bop, Summer Rain, bong, Mr. Bong, Mr. Bong, Mr. Bong.
So you say in your essay that perhaps no poet knew as much about capitalism and corporate boardrooms and economic life in America as Kenneth Fearing.
Yeah, this is a poem that I think exemplifies that. Oh, executive type, would you like to drive a floating power knee-action silk upholstered six, wed a Hollywood star, shoot the course in 58,
right,
draw to the ace, king, jack? I mean, all the things that are kind of mixed there, you know, boardrooms and bedrooms and golf courses and Hollywood and gambling joints. And I think what's powerful about a poem like this is its refusal to kind of discriminate. You know, so later on in the poem, shutting off the gas and having the bank foreclosed and the landlord calling culminates in the radio breaking, as if they're all on the same level.
Right.
And then his death is rendered in the language drawn from comic strips. And while he died is while he lived. And then that kind of moves into, you know, more conventionally hard-boiled language with who the hell are you at the corner of the casket and where the hell we going on the right-hand silver knob and who the hell cares? You know, language out of crime fiction. And then, you know, the language of the conventional obituary is mocked later in the poem, very much missed by the circulation staff of the New York Evening Post.
Yeah, you can imagine getting a little something in the mail from the New York Evening Post when you haven't paid your bill.
Exactly, right. Yeah.
So the poem really takes off, actually, when it gets to that comic book language, when you hear, and wow, he died, and wow, because that's so surprising. I've never read that in a poem from that era, that's for sure.
No, exactly. And I think that's what I meant, is that like if he wasn't always the first person to put something in a poem, I mean, he certainly was among the best in sort of sussing out the culture that was going on around him.
Robert Polito, thanks so much.
Well, thank you.
Robert Polito is the editor of the Selected Poems of Kenneth Fearing, published by the Library of America. You can read his introduction to that book on our website, poetryfoundation.org, where you can also read some Kenneth Fearing poems and an article on him by Jason Boog. Let us know what you think of this program, where our motto is
Ziggins ointment for withered flesh cures thousands of men and women of moles, warts, red veins, flabby throats, scalp, and hair diseases.
Email us at podcast@poetryfoundation.org. The music used in this program comes from the Claudia Quintet. For Poetry Off the Shelf, I'm Curtis Fox. Thanks for listening.